Don't forget that you can now listen to the Politocrat podcast on Audible at audible.com. And wherever you get your podcasts, please subscribe now. And thank you for your support. Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Monday, November the 23rd. 2020. That was the UK Home Secretary, Priti Patel, last Friday, in response to a finding by the independent advisor, Sir Alex Allen, that the Home Secretary bullied people in the Home Office and violated the ministerial code, a code of conduct for ministers in their work and their day-to-day dealings. The Prime Minister backed Priti Patel, despite the report finding by the independent advisor, and the independent advisor promptly quit his position, resigning after nearly 50 years in civil service. On this edition of The Politocrat, a conversation with Dave Penman, the General Secretary of the FDA Trade Union in the United Kingdom. We'll be talking about Priti Patel, about the process, and about the system when it comes to civil servants and their claims of bullying. And we'll get into that and about trade unions in general coming up right after this. With me right now on the Politocrat Daily Podcast is Dave Penman. He is the General Secretary of the FDA Trade Union. It's a union in the United Kingdom that has for at least 100 years now supported, advocated, and protected civil servants in the United Kingdom and beyond, I dare say, and in a number of places for a number of years now. The FDA has done some outstanding work on behalf of civil servants who do really important work all over the world and do a lot of great things in public service. With me right now is Dave Penman. Welcome, Dave, to this edition of the Politocrat podcast.
Thank you very much, Omar. It's really nice to be talking to you.
And thank you for being here. And I just want to start with what has been making the news over the last few days for listeners who may or may not be aware. I know some of my listeners are aware of this, but others may not be. There was a report issued in the United Kingdom, or at least a finding issued in the United Kingdom on Friday by the independent advisor in a situation involving the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who is the Home Secretary in Boris Johnson's Parliament government, the Tory government that the Prime Minister heads. And to be as brief as I can be, and you can perhaps elaborate if needed, there were allegations brought against the Home Secretary for bullying, and there had been numerous allegations brought against her for bullying staff and other civil servants and other subordinates in her capacity in the Home Office. There had been people who had brought these allegations. The bottom line here is that Sir Alex Allen, an independent advisor brought in and recommended by the Prime Minister, who at least was soliciting his recommendation, made the assessment that Priti Patel had engaged in bullying and that she had violated the ministerial code, which is a code that says explicitly that harassing and bullying and disrespect of civil servants or anyone is not permitted whatsoever. And it's something that really generates a sacking. Anybody who's found to violate that ministerial code is to be sacked. Priti Patel was found to have violated that code, according to Sir Alex Allen. And lo and behold, she keeps her job. And with the Prime Minister saying, I find that she didn't violate the code. What is your reaction to all of this, Dave? And can you just explain to us what on earth is going on in the government? This is really perplexing and disturbing.
Yeah, I wish I could explain it. So essentially, this all started at the end of February when the permanent secretary, who's the most senior civil servant working in the Home Office, resigned live on television, the most extraordinary events, saying essentially that he had sought to raise questions around the Home Secretary's behaviour, the Minister's behaviour, including allegations of grilling of staff. And as a result, he was then targeted by allies of the Home Secretary and the press to the point where his job became untenable. And so he resigned and said he was claiming constructive dismissal. He was going to challenge that in the courts, and as a trade union, we're supporting him on that. That then led to the announcement that there would be an investigation into these allegations, because something like that had never happened. Permanent secretaries are kind of people who operate in the shadows in the civil service. They advise ministers. They are not, they're constitutionally not allowed to speak publicly about issues, including political issues. So it was highly unusual for someone to resign in these circumstances and to do so publicly. So there was quite a furore around it at the time. That investigation was conducted under the auspices of the Ministerial Code. The Ministerial Code is the document that really sets out in government how government ministers should behave. It's mainly around things like conflicts of interest and those kind of propriety issues and standards that you would expect of ministers working in government. And it's never really been meant to deal with these kind of HR type issues in relation to kind of bullying and harassment. So it's not really an adequate policy, but it's the only policy there is. It's the only thing that really governs the conduct. And the Ministerial Code is essentially owned by the Prime Minister. There can't be an investigation unless he says so. And ultimately, he is the final arbiter of it. So he makes the decision around whether there's been a breach of the Ministerial Code and then what happens, because only the Prime Minister can sack or appoint ministers in the UK government. So that investigation took place. There were then rumours that it concluded and the Prime Minister was sitting on it. We had heard that it found evidence that Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, had indeed bullied staff, but we don't know because it's kind of cloaked in secrecy, the whole process. And eventually it was becoming quite untenable. You know, 9 months on, there was no conclusion to this. The Prime Minister's spokesman was getting asked every day. Over the last couple of weeks, there have been a series of events that kind of put more pressure on the Prime Minister to come public on this. The former cabinet secretary who used to head the whole of the civil service and who left in the summer, he indicated that the report had been concluded and that the Prime Minister had it several months ago. There started to be leaks around the report. And so on Friday, the Prime Minister kind of broke cover and in doing so, cleared the Home Secretary of breach of the Ministerial Code, even though the report actually said that she had bullied staff and that the Ministerial Code is clear that bullying and harassment is a breach of the Ministerial Code. And the person who advises the Prime Minister on this, Sir Alex Allen, who's the Prime Minister's advisor on standards and on the Ministerial Code, had brought these conclusions to the Prime Minister. He'd ignored them and chose to go against them. And so he then resigned as a result of it, because he was obviously saying, well, yes, it's your decision, Prime Minister, because constitutionally it's your decision, but actually if you're going to ignore all of the evidence, essentially, I mean, I'm paraphrasing on his behalf, but essentially then actually, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for me to continue to in that role. So quite extraordinary events, really, kind of enveloped the Prime Minister, and it has a number of profound consequences. One is that this is the only way 450,000 civil servants can complain about a minister. So if those civil servants were subject, for example, of sexual harassment from a minister, the Ministerial Code is the only way they can actually raise a challenge and raise a complaint. And so it's undermined the confidence of civil servants that the only mechanism they've got to raise these complaints will actually be treated fairly and on the basis of the evidence from the Prime Minister, who again is the only person who makes a decision on it. So it fundamentally undermines the confidence that civil servants have about raising complaints in the future. And I think also, and a number of commentators have raised this, that it has much broader implications for the standards in public life. If actually ministers are not going to be held accountable for their own behaviour, and the Prime Minister is the arbiter of that, what message does that say more broadly about standards, whether it was conflicts of interest, corruption or any other issue, if essentially the Prime Minister is going to say, this isn't about the evidence, this is about what suits me politically in a really kind of partisan political decision, when actually on this, he's supposed to stand above all of that. He's supposed to be the kind of guardian of ethics and standards in government. And that's the decision he's supposed to take. As his predecessor did, his predecessor, Theresa May, sacked two ministers under the ministerial code, one for leaking and one who was actually her closest confidant and essentially the deputy prime minister, following allegations of sexual harassment. And those were really difficult political decisions for Theresa May when she was Prime Minister, particularly the first one around that. But she rose above that and made the right choice for the country and to uphold those standards. So we are in very kind of uncharted territory, I think, here in the UK now. And there are many people now saying that we need a different way of dealing with this. All of this system relied upon the Prime Minister doing the right thing. There's a kind of commentator who says it was always the kind of good chap principle. At the end of the day, there'd be a good chap who's going to make the right decision when it comes to that. If that's not the case and we can't rely on that, then we need a different system, one that's transparent, that's independent, that can police and uphold these standards in public life.
Well, I was going to ask you, you've anticipated something that I was going to ask you, Dave, about the system itself, because, I mean, this is really disturbing. We've seen allegations before Boris Johnson's government and now, in terms of people like John Bercow, the former speaker, Dominic Cummings, a number of other people who've engaged in behaviours and others that I haven't mentioned that really do raise a lot of questions. But this one, to me, is particularly disturbing, because not only did the Prime Minister say, well, you know, I find that she didn't bully, and I know that, as you point out, he is the final arbiter here, but there was no real reasoning, number one, that he provided, and number two, there's WhatsApp messages coming out, according to numerous publications, saying that Boris Johnson had sent a WhatsApp message to Tory MPs saying that we should form a square around the Pritzker. I mean, that sounds like something that you might expect from someone at Eton, Boris Johnson. Someone who is above it all defending a culture that is toxic. I mean, this is, as you point out, it seems to me to be very systemic and very problematic. Is there going to be an investigation? I mean, because this, to me, screams for further investigation. You have Sir Alex Allen, who had been a near 50-year servant, served with a lot of distinction, was well-respected, and he's gone. And the Home Secretary, found to have been bullying, found to have violated the ministerial code, is still at the job.
Yeah, and the difficulty is, you know, all roads lead to the Prime Minister. This is the challenge around this. So the one other area that's looking at this is that about 25 years ago, government set up a Committee for Standards in Public Life. They established what they called the Nolan Principles for kind of standards in public life. And they set a series of principles you would expect, you know, around kind of honesty and integrity. And so this committee, which is actually part of government, funded by government, looks at these and tries to help organisations across the public sector, not just in the civil service, maintain these high standards in public life. The chair of that committee, Lord Evans, who's actually the former head of the security service in the UK, MI5, Lord Evans, had actually said in a speech a couple of years ago, he was raising concerns about the delay with this investigation into Patel. And on Friday, he came out and said that this raises serious concerns about the ministerial code and whether it's an effective mechanism for holding standards of ministers. And that his committee are now going to look at this. They were reviewing these principles of public life and reviewing, as at 25 years then, what they want to do around it. And he's going to conduct an urgent investigation around this. So there may be some hope that another body that's got some broader responsibility for maintaining standards from elected officials and other public servants will actually make some recommendations around this. But at the end of the day, the part of the problem is it will fall back again to the Prime Minister. And really, given his inability to make what seems to be the kind of moral decision and the right decision for the civil service and for the country around us, because it's politically inconvenient, the challenge really is any alternative is going to take power away from providing. Essentially, it's going to say investigations could take place or there could be a process of which he will not be the final arbiter of. And I think that would be very reluctant for them to do that, because that's why they want the system they've got just now. They have to decide that the Prime Minister has to decide in the first place there's an investigation, and then he has to make the kind of final decision. So they don't like giving up that power. And there's no sense from the WhatsApp messages and Twitter messages that came from a whole bunch of kind of sycophantic Conservative MPs, all but saying, well, Priti Patel didn't bully me, right? She's great at what she's doing. There's no sense that actually the party of government, the Conservatives, have an interest in doing something about this. So it's a really worrying development, I think, for good government over here and for the sort of standards that you expect of people in public life. And it's a really worrying development, I think, for civil servants who now face the prospect that if they do face challenging behaviour of whatever element, bullying, harassment, or even sexual harassment, they will have no confidence that raising a complaint is going to result in anything. There's a really interesting parallel here. So you have government and the civil service, and then you have parliament, and they're very separate. And there had been a scandal over the last, around the Me Too movement, the kind of Westminster Me Too movement, around a number of parliamentarians who were accused of harassment, particularly sexual harassment. And we also have members there. And it took 2 years to get a fully independent process there. Similarly, in Parliament, the MPs themselves would have decided previously on any complaint. And of course, party political interest came into that. And so no one had confidence that the process for dealing with complaints against MPs would be open or fair. So no one did raise complaints. The scandal happened. They had an investigation. Hundreds of staff came forward talking about their experience of bullying and harassment from MPs. And eventually, after 2 years, we got a fully independent process. So there's an independent investigation and there are independent decisions that can be made. So bizarrely, if Priti Patel had been in Parliament and conducted herself in this way, it would have been independently investigated and an independent decision would have been taken with a potential sanction. She can walk 100 yards up the road of Whitehall, go into a government department and essentially act with impunity. So we have seen some of this stuff before, and we've now got this contradiction around how Parliament itself regulates itself and how government and ministers regulate themselves. But whether that will result in a change, who knows, because you need the people in power to give that power away. And there's no sign that that's what the Prime Minister wants to do.
Right, absolutely. And the other thing is, as you point out, civil servants, they're so vital and integral to the work that's being done. Support systems, everything that civil servants do in the name of public service. And, again, it's a concern about how that is being undermined. I mean, with this kind of process in this case and in others, there's a grave concern about how civil servants as a whole are being treated. They're not being properly, as you said, the concerns are that they're not going to feel comfortable or safe in an environment when the process that is supposed to be there in place as a check to protect against very overreaching measures by very powerful people is not working in the best interest of everybody in terms of the civil servants who are working. I mean, this is something that is definitely troubling, as far as I'm concerned, and I think you've outlined that here as well, Dave. Because
I think what's important here as well is this is clearly about individuals and ensuring that individuals are not subject to this sort of behaviour. It's actually also about good government. If civil servants are being treated in this way, if ministers are behaving this way, it's bad for government. It's an ineffective way of managing people. These are leaders. These are the most powerful people in a government department, the ministers, the secretaries of state. And so civil servants have to come and give them advice. And sometimes that advice is not very welcome because it's difficult advice. It might be not what the minister wants to hear, but it might be what the minister needs to hear, right? And that's the job of the civil service, to give impartial, the best professional impartial advice. If you think the minister is going to react badly, if you think they're going to shout and swear, if you think you might be moved or penalised for telling them something that's uncomfortable for them, but it's actually important, you're not going to do it. So this is actually really important about making sure that government works effectively. It's not just about the feelings of people. It's also about making sure that ministers make the right decisions and get the advice that they need. And that requires them to create an environment where that sort of advice, however unwelcome, can actually be given to them. And so it has a broader interest, I think, for citizens around how effective their government is. If actually we have a situation where the civil service can't do its job for fear of how ministers will respond and the green light that this might have given to other people and their behaviours across government.
One or two other things just finally about the FDA itself. And I did at the top of our conversation talk about the fact that your trade union has been doing work on behalf of civil servants, protecting their interests, looking out for them, advocating for them and providing support for them in that way for, you know, over 100 years and beyond the UK as well, as far as I know. Can you talk a little bit about the work that you do and that the FDA has done in terms of civil servants overall, please?
Yeah, of course. We were founded in 1919, just after the First World War. And initially, we were found to look after the kind of most senior people in government, the most senior civil servants. And gradually, over over 100 years, we've expanded our membership. We have an extraordinary breadth of membership. We have some of the most senior civil servants in the land. We also represent, as you say, people around the globe. We represent diplomats. We represent people uniquely in the security services. So James Bond would be an FDA member in those circumstances. So people working at the heart of government, prosecutors, inspectors of education, lawyers, a whole range of professionals, people who work in the tax authorities and do tax investigation, as well as people just running government. And it's incredible because what we're so proud of is that the values that our members hold around delivering public services, about political impartiality, about professionalism, integrity, all of those things go to the heart of being a civil servant. And they're part of what's called the Civil Service Code. It's their equivalent of the Ministerial Code and the one that they're bound to abide by. And those are the values that, as an organisation and a trade union, we seek to promote. So as well as doing what trade unions do, negotiating pay, those kind of normal workplace issues, representing you if you're in trouble and dealing with that, we also advocate for those issues that were put into our founding principles 100 years ago about not only defending civil servants, but defending the civil service itself and the values of the civil service. And that's why on issues like this, there's a clear overlap for us, because clearly at the heart of this issue with Priti Patel is about individuals and how they've been dealt with. And as a trade union, we want to represent them and defend their interests, but also recognise it has a broader implication for the civil service itself and the effectiveness of the civil service. And that's a lot of what we do. There have been huge challenges in this country, particularly around Brexit, around the political impartiality of the civil service. That's constantly been challenged. And this government, in particular Boris Johnson's government, has sought to push the boundaries of that. So whether it was proroguing Parliament and potentially threatening to go against Parliament, the way they've dealt with and appointed people like special advisors and changed the way that government works, they're pursuing a policy just now of potentially breaking the law, which is part of the Civil Service Code for a civil servant. Upholding the rule of law as part of this code that they're bound by, and has resulted in the resignation of the chief legal advisor to the government as a result of that. So there are a lot of challenges just now to those core values of impartiality, professionalism, and integrity in the civil service, and we're at the forefront of that, as we have been. Occasionally in our history, when we look back over 100 years, there were times when these things happened. You know, there would be a moment, usually around a political crisis, when these kind of values were most challenged, and we as a union were at the heart of it. It feels like it's an almost weekly event now, rather than a kind of once in a decade event with this government, because it very much is a different style of government, much more kind of Trumpian, to be honest, in its approach to things, and its willingness to push boundaries that kind of normal governments in the past haven't done. And that raises huge challenges for all of those issues that are important to our members, and as a union that we hold very dear. So that's what we do. So we like to think we're not just like most trade unions, just looking at kind of employment issues. We try and enter this kind of space of public policy and defending good government as well.
And one last thing, and I appreciate your explanation as well, for those who aren't aware of what you do, what the FDA does. There are other, and I think of entities like the TUC, the Trade Union Congress, and others. Now, these are all different entities, obviously. The TUC is different from what you do at the FDA, I suppose. But all of these are organizations, I guess, that try to do the same kinds of things to protect people in unions and things.
Yeah, I mean, they are a bit like the trade unions across the country. You know, most of them are centred around workplace issues, whether that's in the public sector, private sector. These are things, you know, there's been huge health and safety issues, as there are across the globe around COVID, and how do people continue to deliver public services and the challenges that faces around doing that in a safe way, and pay and the kind of normal terms and conditions stuff. So trade unions, a lot of overlap around kind of trade unions and trade union organisations. And some of those trade unions have a similar kind of role to us, where actually, whilst they're about those kind of bread and butter trade union issues, they also take an interest in some broader issues. A lot of the health unions are like that. So they you know, they spend a lot of time campaigning around getting to make sure the health service is funded, that's organised well, that it works effectively, because actually for their members, although they're working in healthcare and obviously are concerned about their pay, they want to make sure, because they care passionately about healthcare, that their National Health Service continues to thrive and survive sort of stuff. So we're unique in a way. But there is an awful lot of overlap around with the other trade unions that we work with, both in the public sector and elsewhere. Because generally speaking, you know, trade unions are, I think, a force for good. I suppose I would say that. But, you know, but they're trying to look after individuals. They're trying to rebalance power between an individual and an employer. They don't always get it right. They don't always necessarily work in everyone's best interest. At times, like all organisations, there's a good history and a bad history. But generally speaking, I think the vast majority of trade unions do really good and important work, both in the workplace and the kind of public realm around these sorts of issues. And if we can highlight those issues, if we can give some voice to the concerns that our members have got, and particularly for civil servants when they're not allowed, they're constitutionally not allowed to speak out, then really that's from the heart of government, the people who are actually living these issues day in, day out, whose job it is to deliver for the public. We are able to give them a voice so the public can hear what they say and what their views are about what's going on. And that's a really important part of what our job is.
And finally, Dave, any kind of website information that you'd like to give out to the audience to find out more about the FDA, and any advice perhaps that you might have for civil servants or for anything like that that you might want to say here as we conclude the conversation.
Okay, I mean, you can have a look. We put a lot of these issues up on our websites, which is fda.org.uk. My message to everyone listening to this: if you're not a member of a trade union, join a trade union. I think that's one of the you know, you insure your car, you insure your house, you insure your job by joining a trade union. And also, I think there are a lot of assumptions people make about trade unions and what they do, and just try and find a bit about the reality of what that actually means, because there are lots of people doing the good work that I think that we are doing in a positive way, both in the UK and across the world, sort of stuff. So explore, investigate, find out the facts for yourself, and join a union if you can.
Thank you so very much for that. And thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Omar.
The General Secretary of the FDA Trade Union. Really appreciate your time today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Omar.
I want to thank Dave Penman once again for his time. Dave Penman is the General Secretary of the FDA Trade Union in the United Kingdom. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.